we're here.
We're here.
We just had some technical diarrhea. I don't know what the best human body something for is, but we're here now. My camera crapped out when we were about to go live, so I don't know what happened, but we're here just a few minutes late.
Still here, still angry and ineffective.
Dan is more angry and I'm more ineffective because Dan is wearing the shirt and I didn't wear it today. So mine's just naked.
I'm
just
like,
yeah. But we're continuing our conversation about, the theme of angry and effective anger. We're continuing to talk about anger, and today we're going to talk a little bit about divine wrath and aggression and all sorts of stuff. But first, let's introduce ourselves as usual.
Let's do that.
I'm Ash Van Steenwyck. I direct the Center for Prophetic Imagination.
And I'm Daniel Wolpert. I direct Mike at the Minnesota Institute of Contemplation and Healing. And yeah, CK, I don't know what happened.
Wait, is that Wednesday, Thursday, Friday?
Yeah, Thursday, Friday. I don't think so. Yeah. You got to get up on your urban speak there, Ash.
I don't know. We used to say what the fuck in rural Minnesota too. Don't be metropolitanist. Whatever.
Right. So the place that we wanted to start out this morning, had a great episode on Monday. It was really so fun to see everybody back and tons of great comments, and that was terrific. And one of the things that I was thinking about after that episode is how I really think we need to distinguish more clearly between anger and aggression.
Yes.
And a lot of the comments and a lot of the things we were talking about on Monday really showed or spoke to me about how we very much confuse and conflate those two things. Part of this is that we're not particularly skilled or even knowledgeable about emotions, where emotions come from, our embodied experience of emotions, and then the connection of our emotions to our behavior and to the conceptual world within which we live out our emotional and behavioral life. And so, all that often just gets collapsed into one thing, like somebody's yelling or somebody's behaving badly to somebody else, right? And so I think it's just helpful for a moment or two to kind of tease a bunch of that stuff apart, right? And so when we're talking about anger, when we're talking about an emotion, we're really talking about something that begins as a psychophysical experience, right? So we maybe have a weird feeling in our stomach, or our chest tightens, our thoughts maybe start to race, or we feel distress mentally. And then it eventually bubbles up to what might be called a fully formed emotion, which is attached to this energy that is moving through us, and we then label it as an emotion, right? So we have this word in English language, anger, that we attach to that whole experience. And then that fits into an entire worldview or conceptual framework. So, is that emotion good? Is it bad? What do I do with it? Am I allowed to have it? Is somebody else not allowed to have it? What are the behaviors that are okay to be associated with that emotion? Right? And we then take all of that stuff and we somehow relate to it from the perspective of our habitual ego selves, right? And often one of the styles of the way that our ego self relates to the world, both our internal world and our external world, is what is called aggression, which means that our ego self is now trying to control, to fix, to dominate, to alter our experience of reality, right? So we relate to our reality with an incredible amount of aggression. And often, anger is the emotion that triggers aggression. Now, there can be other emotions that trigger aggression, right? So fear can trigger aggression. Sometimes anxiety can trigger aggression. All kinds of things can be related to that. But oftentimes, anger is very much connected to that. And so when we then see or experience aggression, right? And so that whole procession of things that I just outlined, right? Starting off with maybe this nebulous feeling, going all the way through conceptual reality, emotional response, all the way to aggression. That all can happen in like a nanosecond, right? So suddenly we're walking down the street and we trip, and now we're yelling at the sidewalk, right? Like that can all just happen in an instant. And oftentimes when we're talking societally or interpersonally about anger, what we're actually talking about is the aggression. And aggression is actually different from the emotion of anger, but we rarely distinguish those two. And so I just think it's really important to kind of lay that out there, and you know, we can maybe engage with that a little bit more, or maybe if there are comments, reflections on that.
Well, and there's, you know, this is where it gets really interesting when you start thinking about the anger-aggression relationship when it comes to things like masculinity or white supremacy or colonization. Because part of the trope, like, if you listen to Dennis Prager, the esteemed scholar, I'm sorry, I can't even say that this. One of the things on his show, because I used to listen to it, and sometimes I still tune in and for as long as I can handle it. He has this idea that liberals are driven by emotion, whereas conservatives are driven by logic. And this points in this direction of like, there's this archetypal almost idea of the conservative rational white male. That underneath the surface of every human being is this animalistic bubbling of emotions that you have to be in domination over. And that, you know, like what the rational man is someone who has been able to temper their emotions with the steely control of their logic, which has nothing to do with emotion somehow, right? That there's no logic in emotions, which is one of the first mistakes. And that likewise, white civilization, Western civilization, has the same social function of tamping down animalistic behavior. And so when you see, like when colonization is white society or Western society or Christendom or whatever, going to the savages and controlling them for their own benefit. And when you see Black Lives Matter on the streets, it's like there's this white supremacist idea of blacks being more animalistic. And so the disgusting irony of it all is, if we're going to talk about civilizations that are aggressive, we're talking about Western civilization probably in a unique way historically in the ways that we've fed into colonization. And so this ties all into it. Like this, there's this, you know, if we get really psychological, there's all this projection going on. So it's kind
And also if you look at the description that you just gave, right, there were several times in that where you talked about the ego self, mm-hmm, giving incredible aggression towards emotion and towards other people, right? So the entire idea of logic is based on aggression. It's actually, yes, predicated on aggression, right? Like any feeling I have, any disagreement, you know, if one of these native folks says, hey, excuse me, like, I don't like you burning down my village. Maybe there's another way to do this. We have to like kill that person, right? The entire thing is predicated on aggression. And it, you know, we can be nice and civilized until somebody disagrees or somebody has a different point of view or somebody doesn't like what we're doing. Right. And this is the whole thing that is happening so much. We see these conversations all the time in relation to racism, right? And And a black person will say, oh, they're all these nice white people until I get a job in their company and suggest that we do something in a different way because what they're doing is racist. Suddenly that person is just attacked with all this aggression. Mm-hmm. Right? So the entire thing is predicated on aggression.
Yeah, never mind the fact that, you know, we can talk about violence this way. So if white society is incredibly violent, but it's built in structurally into the point where we don't think about it a whole lot. Mm-hmm. And so if someone on the street like gets upset because their home was taken away and throw a brick through a bank window, suddenly that's violent, not the taking of their home. So there's all sorts of like, it, maybe it's not that subtle, but it's subtle to many of us because it's so baked in. And so it's impossible to really talk about anger apart from these things, because the first time you notice anger, like, so why is it like the person who called us angry and effective considers anger part of Black Lives Matter's brand? We don't like what are Black Lives Matter. Are those of us who are protesting in the streets, you know, and saying Black Lives Matter angrier? Yes, in some ways, but are we more aggressive than no? There's way less aggression from Black Lives Matter than from the police, and the police don't even have to be angry to be aggressive. In fact, they're trained to be as aggressive as possible with as little anger as possible. So you don't have to be angry to kill, you know, George Floyd. There wasn't necessarily anger involved in that.
Right.
So a couple of comments coming in, these kind of go with each other here. First, CK writes, can you elaborate on the chemical release that happens with anger?
No. Well, so again, every emotional state, there is a bodily correlation, right? So our nervous system, and you know, most people don't even think about the fact that our nervous system is fully embodied, right? I mean, we sort of know that intellectually, but we don't really think about that. So, I mean, our brain is not just our nervous system isn't just up here in our head, right? Everything is completely continuous with every part of our body,
including and thinking. So thinking doesn't just happen here either.
So any experience that we have is correlated with electrochemical impulses, within this system. And we ultimately label those experiences with words that correlate to emotional states. And so what's very interesting about this, right, is that similar, you know, we may have very different words for actually a very similar chemical release, right? So, for example, one of the best examples of this is certain kinds of fear and anxiety and excitement. Those are actually almost the same chemical states. But depending on how we're relating to that energy that's moving through us, we may experience and label them conceptually as very different things. Right. So one of the ways to think about it, like a good analogy is computers, right? We know that so we're seeing something on the screen, and we know that behind that is a certain kind of programming language, and then behind that is a whole bunch of machine language, right? Zeros and ones. Mm-hmm. So when we're talking about the chemical state, we're like talking about those zeros and ones, right? That's the most basic data that we're dealing with. And then we build up from there and create this entire conceptual reality. And then we relate to that conceptual reality then often with this kind of aggression. Mm-hmm. Right? And so, it was very interesting, like, when we were having the Derek Chauvin trial, and one of the witnesses was this black guy who, was a martial arts expert. That's one of the ways that he identified himself. And the defense tried to paint him as the angry black man. And one of the things that he kept talking about on the witness stand was like, no, I was not acting in an aggressive way. Yes, I was angry and upset, but I was staying in my body and being very present to what was happening. And he did this great job of really disarming this angry black man trope, and talking about the fact that he was simply a human being that was upset by what was going on, which is not some sort of a, you know, bad, unintelligent thing.
Mm-hmm. Well, coming from Catherine, can you talk about relative perceptions of aggression? There's a whole thing where people with enough power don't have to be outwardly aggressive to enact their will upon others.
That's right. That's what we were just talking about.
While people experiencing oppression get framed as aggressive for responding intensely. That is totally, and this is, and I don't want this, we could generalize a lot here, but there, one tendency, and I don't think this is, I don't want to generalize this too much, is there is a tendency for people who maybe we might think of as conservative to be very anecdotal or interpersonal about everything. And maybe the further left you go, you might say there's this tendency to think more systemically. I mean, that's one of the standard. And one of the ways we see this play out is if someone doesn't look like they're yelling in your face, then it can't be anger and it can't be aggression. Right. So again, that's why we can't, why so many people do not think of banks as violent. Because if you go to a bank, they're the most polite, dull human beings you've ever met in your entire life. So right. How can they be aggressive? Well, and they can't be aggressive because, you know, the banker's not yelling at you. The dude who throws a brick through the window is angry and aggressive. And so then that's the person who gets vilified. And so I think it has a lot to do with power and whether or not, if you have your aggression baked into the system that you created or benefited from, you have the luxury of not losing your shit to enact your will. And so much anger, in my experience, you know, speaking from a perspective of trauma and being triggered and stuff, a lot of aggression and anger that comes out of me comes out of a feeling of being trapped or powerless. You don't know what to do, and so it erupts out of you, right?
Right.
And so you can talk about that as it's being infantile, like that's usually how it's talked about, but really that's an experience of profound powerlessness and not knowing what to do. And that gets vilified as though it's somehow more powerful, right, which is bizarre.
Yeah, and so, I mean, this is one of the reasons why we really wanted to sort this out because, right, if you know, on Monday we were talking about anger having a lot of intelligence. And so in relation to injustice, that's one of the reasons why there's often discussion of anger in relation to injustice, because the intelligence of the person who is either experiencing the oppression or the person who is seeing the oppression, that intelligence is manifest as anger. And you're right, Catherine, that what the oppressor will do is say, oh, you're being right bad and aggressive and violent. And, you know, I'm sitting here very nicely in my castle with my entire squadron of knights feasting at the round table. Like, we're not being aggressive, you know, never mind the fact that the next day you ride out of the castle and burn the whole village down because they're trying to defy you and not pay taxes. Right. Mm-hmm. So, yeah. So this is why it's, I think, really valuable to be able to look at situations and say, all right, so. Right. Where is the aggression, which is related to the domination and control of the individual or systemic ego? And where is some sort of anger that is arising out of the situation and it's manifesting the intelligence in a person or a group who are organizing?
Well, and just to make us kind of a sideways step here, I mean, this is why it's so important that we don't fall into the bad habit of thinking of contemplative practice or mindfulness as a sort of self-calming only.
Right.
Because that's how it's being used in mindfulness circles. Like, you can be the chillest human being in the world and still be a fucker. Like, if you're not using, if contemplation doesn't help you perceive the complexities of reality in front of you in a way that you can notice injustice, then you're just a calm motherfucker. Like, that's it. That's it. Like, and that's not the goal of the spiritual life. But so many people think it is.
All right.
Had to use the swear words too, because it's angry and ineffective.
Ineffective, yes.
CK writes, Ayn Rand gave conservatives a script to read, and they have been running with it for a while now. And that's true.
Yeah, that is true.
Yeah, piece of work. Kathleen writes, I am late joining you, internet problems. We had internet problems.
We had internet problems. It may have been our internet problem.
Yeah, so who knows? Gus writes, I would love to hear Dennis Prager trying to make sense of Peter Kropotkin. I'm sure I misspelled both names. I think you misspelled Dennis, and then you misspelled Kropotkin. We forgive you, Gus. And his book, Mutual Aid. Conservative is rational, but sharing resources for the benefit of the groups, silly. part of what I think you're pointing at, so Peter Kropotkin, noted anarcho-communist, kind of hobbyist naturalist in the vein of Darwin, and he saw that mutual aid is a driver of evolution in a way that's at least as significant as competition. And so it's interesting, I think the point that Gus is getting to, like, cooperation and mutual aid is every bit as rational for human survival as the idea of competition, maybe even more so, yet somehow conservatives latch on to this more shallow understanding of Darwinian stuff for rationality. Like, why property rights somehow being more rational than the commons? And it just shows, like, you can point to your supreme rationality, but a lot of rationality for a lot of people is just rationalization after the fact. And we need to acknowledge that.
Yeah. Well, and, you know, it's easy to be rational when you have a full stomach, right? I mean, so much of this is, I don't mean easy to be rational in a good way, right? So much of that is once you've got this power and you're dominating people and you're sitting behind layers and layers of oppression and protection, you know, yeah, it's easy to sit back and pretend like you're being nice and rational from that vantage point.
For sure. David writes, interesting distinction between anger and aggression. That was very helpful. Thank you.
Good.
David also writes, Western civilization being driven or predicated by aggression makes me think of the collective unconscious that drives a culture. How do cultures, society obtain intelligence quotient skills? I mean, right. It's interesting when we start thinking about the psyche of a society, because at a certain level, like it's there's a lot of metaphor baked into it, but there's some truth to it. There's definitely institutions have a sort of logic and memory. Mm-hmm. And so, and they form us as individuals within the collective. So we tend to like be habituated into the logic or structures of that society. And so it gets harder when you say, like, how can a system be aggressive? Because we tend to, aggression is like is maybe language we think about with persons. But yeah, if a society is driven in racism, if it's baked into our society, which it is, it's very aggressive towards people of color. It's got the logic and memory of colonization baked into it. And so at a certain level, like, you know, how we deal with that, it gets complicated, but it's helpful to look at and say, yes, there's definitely a strong similarity between an aggressive person and an aggressive society in the way that there's logic baked into it.
Well, in one way, David, what you're talking about, that, for example, a number of Native groups talk about Western civilization as they encountered it, is that basically it's demon possessed.
Yeah.
You know, that they're possessed by this Wendigo spirit of consumption, which is incredibly aggressive. Mm-hmm. And simply just wants to, you know, ravage everything that it comes in contact with. And, you know, that certainly is a theory that fits the data.
For sure. Shell writes, example of justified effective anger. I just finished the autobiography of Malcolm X. Did he die too soon because of his anger? He, in my opinion, also shifted collective consciousness at the same time. Paraphrasing here, follow MLK or you'll have to deal with me.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, Malcolm, like a lot of those folks, was assassinated because he was just too dangerous. And he is extremely, quote, uncompromising, and I'm using that in a good way, not a negative way, in terms of his angry analysis of white American society. And that was incredibly powerful. Yeah, and got him killed.
Catherine writes, I think music can be such a great example of how we don't need to see anger as an isolated emotion. Rage can be expressed with creativity, grief, longing, humor, connection, tenderness, imagination, beauty. Well, and like we mentioned yesterday, it's can often be fueled and animated by love. I mean, that's the classic mama bear, you know? Like you, this angry defending of the things that are sacred and beautiful.
Yeah.
So... yeah.
Yeah. And it also, I mean, that comment also makes me think of what we were talking about on Monday, that, you know, that we have this great range and multiplicity of emotion that, that we, you know, our society tends to distill down to like one thing.
Yeah. I'm hardly ever experiencing just one emotion. And I'm, and it's like, I hardly have one will. Like we're more than just one isolated consciousness in some sort of. Yeah. Boxed in easy to understand way. Otherwise, we wouldn't feel so messed up all the time.
Well, I'm fine.
Yeah. Are you, you're fine? Yeah, I'm fine too.
I'm fine.
Yeah. Good. I'm good. Catherine writes, white moral panics about hip-hop frame it as angry music. That's right. Yeah. As though that means it's all bad and simple. Yet songs have made me laugh, cry, hope, release, feel less alone, seek action, etc. in all kinds of complex ways. For yep. sure.
Yeah, and that's a great another example of how right angry is labeled as this very negative thing, mm-hmm. And it's not at all. That's a great example.
Cheryl writes, "Anger is a manifestation of intelligence." I like this. Mm-hmm. CK, systemic obedience. Yeah.
No.
Kathleen writes, women are labeled bitches if they express any form of anger. Totally right. True.
Yeah. And so, you know, again, this is one of the ways, and that's an example of aggression, right? So the white male patriarchal system mm-hmm. is threatened if a woman is angry, right, at the way she's treated, at patriarchy, at anything, right? And so it attacks her, labels her in a negative way, and basically wants to then snuff out or be incredibly dismissive of both the emotion and the intelligence and then her as a person. And so that's a great example of that.
Man, look at how, if you ever wade into conservative spaces and look at how they talk about AOC, it's fascinating. Like I don't care. Let's just say, her policies aside, she's often depicted as being dumb and emotional and volatile. Which
at the same time highly sexualized too. I mean, that's the very interesting.
Yes. So think about that. How that's that's kind of a, and all those can be within a Western dominant, like white male way of thinking, are very animalistic. So think about that. Like my experience of AOC, like even if I don't agree with everything, but like she seems way more eloquent than most. It doesn't seem as particularly emotional and usually very rational. There's some snarky humor in there, which I find delightful. Yeah. So that's my jam. But, you know, it's just interesting. Like, and if you try to point this out, they're like, there's no sexism or racism in me. I'm being rational.
Right.
We're running low on time, but I kind of want to just maybe pivot and we'll probably pick up on this.
Yeah.
Like now, after everything we've said about anger and aggression, I think it's interesting to then talk about, like, what does it mean for God to be mad?
Right.
I know that's maybe a hard pivot, but, like, we're so trained to think of God as a white dude. Really? So that the idea that God having wrath or anger is like an abusive white dad with a like the tank white tank top.
Right.
And so any other way of – so to the point we can't even talk about the intelligent, loving anger of God in some other way. Like what about talking about God angry the way Malcolm X was angry, the way AOC is angry, the way Black Lives Matter is depicted as angry, the way a mama bear is angry about her cubs being exploited by kings and false prophets.
Yes.
And how do we reframe that? And what does that mean?
Yeah. And because what I think we mostly do, we being the church at large and most of the Christian tradition, what we mostly do is every time we see the word anger or wrath in the Bible in relation to God, we actually are substituting the term aggression. And so that's where you get this massively abusive theology. You get this idea of, you know, God sending the majority of people to hell for eternal torture. You get this idea of, yeah, if you don't do what I say, I'm going to zap you. Right? All of these things. And we miss entirely all these things, Ash, that you just talked about. Right. Mm-hmm. So if when we're talking about God and being angry, we're actually talking about this incredibly clear intelligence. I mean, in Buddhism, they talk about prajna, which is this incredibly clear intelligence that cuts through all of the injustice, all of the bullshit, all of the things that we throw up as obstacles to treating people well. God sees right through all of that and is going to the heart of the matter of loving transformation. Right, we don't read anger as that at all. Go ahead.
CK writes, the insidious way aggression creeps into our ways of life through government tell us it's for your own good.
Which often comes from the family line, right? I'm beating you, it's for your own good. You know, dad's going to yell at you for your own good. Yeah.
I mean, think about bureaucracy. It's one of the most emotionally flat experiences. That's how it's presented. But it is profoundly violent. Anyone who's like unable to get housing or food because of a bureaucratic piece of bullshit, and then you're the aggressive one because you raise your voice because you're afraid.
Because you get mad. Yeah.
This is a good example. Heather writes, it would be, and this is coming from Jesus. So Jesus is usually pitted as being kindly and nice over against his evil dad, right? So Jesus says, it would be better to be drowned with a millstone around your neck if you cause one of these little ones to stumble. I don't know if, you know, you could take that as a divine threat, but the way I interpret it is like, what you're doing is so horrific that you are, but your souls are so hardened. Your hearts are so hardened, you can't see it. It would be better if you were like cast into the sea and experienced a painful death than for you to do this. Is to me a very powerful, emotional, and insightful assertion. Not like, watch out. If you say the wrong thing or teach the doctrine of the Trinity falsely, I will send you to eternal hell. Or if you masturbate, I will send you to hell. Like, those are very different statements, but because we tend to collapse anger, aggression, and everything into one, and it's a very colonizing, dominating understanding of aggression that we have. Like, we'd assume that's what Jesus must be talking about, or what God's about.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Well, another great conversation. Thank you, everybody, for your comments and reflections. Good to be with you all.
And we'll see you on Friday. And we're going to have to wrap some fascism into that bad boy.
Oh, yeah.
As is our custom. So
take care.
Friday.